You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
I was asked to speak at a pre-deployment briefing because they had some individuals in their group who had anonymously said that they were thinking about taking their lives. And he wrote me after I spoke, and he said, "If you ever wonder if what you're doing is making a difference, I can tell you with 100% certainty you are making a difference. You connected so much with one of the soldiers that he broke down and asked for help." And 3 days later, I heard the second one came forward and asked for help too.
Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, presented by Minky Couture. Are you looking for something beautiful and cozy to add to your home these cold winter days? Minky Couture is the answer. Cozy, soft, a color for every room in the house, and always the best blanket ever. Visit minkycouture.com or any of their 6 in-store locations today.
I'm Michelle Scharf.
And I'm Jenny Taylor. And today we're going to have a serious conversation, Michelle, with a good friend of mine who I met. Our paths crossed. My good friend Karen Mojecki, our paths crossed because we're both surviving family members of soldiers who have died and are no longer with us. Karen, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Jenny. Hi, Michelle.
Hello.
Good to be here.
We're so grateful to have you. You, of course, are the proud mother of Major Wesley J. Hinckley, United States Army, who is no longer with us, and you're going to hear his story. Just a notice out to our listeners, we are going to be talking about death by suicide, some serious things, some important things that we as a society definitely have got to continue getting better at talking about. And so we just want to kind of let everyone know that this will be a very important conversation. And we're so grateful that Karen is willing to share what has to be a horrible, awful story you wish weren't yours. So thank you for being willing to be an advocate for other families and other people who may be struggling. And I know, and I'm sure you'll be able to share with us in the next several minutes, you've done wonderful work helping other people, whether they've lost by suicide or trying to prevent that loss in the first place. So just up front, thank you for joining. Thank you for raising wonderful son who would be willing to serve in our country and put on that uniform. And we're just really looking forward to getting to know you a bit better today and hearing you and Wesley's story.
Well, thank you. I appreciate having an opportunity to share. I have a passion for offering hope and changing the trend in suicide. I think that's something very important for us to bring to the forefront in our society. It's been something that people don't want to talk about. People have a hard time even talking about death, but suicide death is a problem that is not discussed.
Yeah.
And as we said, because we are talking about a serious conversation, if there's someone out there who's listening to us as we're talking, if you're having some thoughts and you need to talk to someone, please dial 988. That's the suicide hotline and crisis lifeline. Press 1 if you're a veteran at that number, and you can talk to another veteran.
I love that they have that peer-to-peer option on that phone call, that if you are someone who served in the military, perhaps connecting with someone else who served in the military would be the most helpful person to talk to. So, Karen, let's jump into this. Tell us a little bit about you and your family. Back up to when Wesley was your little boy at home, and tell us how did he end up as Major Hinckley?
How did he become Major Hinckley? Oh, that's an interesting story. Actually, I have 2 sons, and Wes was the firstborn. And 21 months later, his brother Jason arrived. And from the time they were little, they used to call Mom the drill sergeant because I was a strict mom who enforced the family rules.
You got him ready for boot camp from a young age.
I did. I really did. That's what they said anyway. But, you know, on a side note, after boot camp, they all came home and said, hey, Mom, you were too easy on us.
Oh, should have made it tougher.
Should have made it tougher. But Wes loved the military from the time he was little. Other kids had baseball and football cards. Wes had his prized collection of World War II cards.
Wow.
He studied military history. He played Stratego and all of those other military strategy games. He wanted to be in the Army in the worst way. I mean, that was his goal in life.
Did he join at a young age?
Well, he tried to get in right after high school, and he was a little bit underweight, so he didn't make it. So his brother, they had that special program between junior and senior year in high school where you could go to boot camp. His brother got in before him, and there was some sibling rivalry. Uh-huh. But that ended when Wes eventually went to ROTC after being in the infantry 3 years. He went to ROTC at Shippensburg, and he chose his brother to be the person to give him his first salute.
Oh, I love that brotherhood.
That brotherhood. You know, sometimes with your children, you don't know if they're going to have bonds throughout life because there's competition, but their competition went by the wayside. And
they both joined, both in the Army.
Both were Army, yes.
And how was that as mom, to be the mom of two soldiers? I mean, obviously, if you had the discipline and things, did you have reservations for that career choice for them? What was your kind of response?
Actually, before I had them, I had thought about going in the military.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I had gone as far as I had taken all my tests, and I had my day that I was going to go in and go through the in processing. And I had just really grew closer to God. And I said, now, God, if this isn't what you want me to do, let me know. And the day I was going in for my in-processing, we had over 21 inches of snow, and I couldn't get there.
Oh,
and
wow.
I said, you know,
intervention.
If God's going to send 21 inches of snow, I guess I wasn't supposed to go.
Oh, that's funny. But, all right. So later on, you've got these two boys that join. Speak to us a little bit about Wes's military career. I know, but my husband was a major as well, and he was in the Army 15 years as a major. Sounds like Wes was enlisted first. Then
he was enlisted for three.
Then ROTC, then commissioned. Tell us that story.
Well, he said that rather than go to college first, he decided he wanted to go infantry because if he wanted to be an officer, it would be easier for him to relate to his men if he went through the same things that they went through.
Yeah.
Oh,
I love that. I'm going to interject just real quick for those who are listening that maybe aren't as familiar with the military. There's two definite tracks. There's the enlisted track and then there's the officer track. And you can either become an officer through an ROTC or you can go to officer candidate school or what. But it's a definite structure where there's, you know, you become the private, the corporal, the sergeant all the way up, or you're the lieutenant, the captain, the major. Two separate tracks. And so I have found that to be true, Karen, that many of the officers who can best relate to the enlisted men are those who were enlisted themselves first. Brent chose that route as well. He wasn't in quite as long. He had a year or two enlisted before he went into the ROTC. But I think that shows compassion for the leader he was, that knowing in leading men, he wanted to be able to experience a little bit of what they experienced. So that's great.
It is. He had a heart for what he was doing, and he loved the people that he served with. He made friends for life every duty station he had.
Tell us where he was stationed in those first 3 years, and then it sounds like he went to college for a bit, and then how many more years after the university, after commissioning, was he in the Army?
Wes started with, he went to Fort Benning. He was in Georgia, yes. He was going for the Ranger. He wanted to go Ranger. But he kept going underweight. They would send him through the chow line twice because he was so tall and thin.
Oh, really?
And they told him, they said, hey, you got to go through the chow line twice. You know,
you got to pack it on.
He had to pack it on. But that's where he started. And then after that, he was in Korea, Fort Polk, and Fort Drum. And they call those usually career enders. Usually when you go to one of those bases, you know, it's like, oh, you've had enough of the military. But he went to all three and made it through all three.
Do they call them career enders because they're difficult assignments? Or
They are.
So he had three stations in a row that would typically weed out some other soldiers, but he was resilient and stayed in.
Absolutely. He was determined. He was very determined. I remember I used to get him up early in the morning when he came home for break, and he wanted to beat his running time. So I would be on the bicycle at daybreak outside, and I would be riding and pacing him to try and get him up to the speed he wanted to run.
You were his personal trainer. I love that. That's, I can picture that in my mind. Let's go, boys. Come on.
Yep, let's go.
Tell us, Wes, was he married? Did he have any children? What was his military life like in terms of how it impacted you and your family, him and his family, during those years of his service?
Well, Wes didn't date much when he was at those first three stations, and then he went to college, and he wasn't able to identify with some of the young women in the college because he was several years older, and he had a more of a serious bent in life. So he actually went to eHarmony.com and was matched with a girl in Texas, and it just so happened that Texas was his first duty station when he got his commission.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that worked out well for him to meet her.
It did. It did. And they hit it off. And, you know, about 9-10 months later, he proposed to her and they got married. We went to Texas for the wedding. And it was about 3 years later, they had a little boy.
Okay.
So that brings us up to about 2008, when his little boy was born.
Okay.
And I would say at that point, he was a Bradley commander. And a Bradley is not a tank. My son would always lecture me about that. That's not a tank. I called it a tank. No, it's not a tank, Mom.
But it is a big army vehicle.
It is. My brother-in-law was on a Bradley.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Yep. Yep. Because I kept calling
not
it
a tank.
Wes,
Mom,
Wes
it's
got
not a tank.
I got a book.
Oh.
For the holidays. He gave
get
me
to
a
know
book
your army
holidays.
Vehicles.
Well, just it was all about the Bradley. It was all about the Bradley. So I still have it here. So he was very proud to do that role, but his wife was nervous about him being a Bradley commander. So she said, could you maybe change your MOS and go into something else? And well, he also had finance. He had a dual degree, military history and finance when he graduated.
Okay.
So he went into finance and he served in
finance within the military.
In the military.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, because the military actually has big amounts of cash that they deal with.
Large dollars,
yes. The first deployment to Iraq, he spent a lot of time, he and another guy had to sleep with the cash.
Oh, my goodness.
That was a challenge because it was like they were the last line of defense for the cash. They slept in the
where
big...
where it was stored. Wow.
Yes.
We are so happy to have Minky Couture as the sponsor of Relentlessly Resilient.
We both have several of these blankets in our homes for us and our families to get through those cold winter nights.
Oh, Minky makes the softest, most indulgent blankets.
And you know I feel they make the best gifts.
Any time of year, doesn't matter. Everybody loves a Minky.
Visit Minky in store or online at minkycouture.com. Treat yourself or a loved one to the gift of comfort today. Oh, Okay, so this gives us a good background. So you mentioned that he was deployed to Iraq. Was that just one time? Was there more than one combat deployment in addition to the different duty stations where he served?
He had two deployments to Iraq.
Both to Iraq. Okay. Tell us, obviously, we're here today to talk about your late son. He's no longer here living with us. Can you walk us through what exactly happened? Tell us his story, your story as a family, how he went from where he was to losing him.
Okay. The best perspective I can give you is what I went through. And
yes,
then
absolutely.
Share what I learned after the fact.
Oh, yeah.
It was April 4th, 2011, and it was a Monday morning. Now, Mondays are always rough, but this one was especially rough. I woke up early in the morning. I felt like I was getting the flu or something. Something was attacking my body. Felt exhausted, couldn't get motivated. I felt deep within myself that something was definitely wrong. And I spent most of the day resting and reading. Around 6:30 that evening, I thought, okay, you know, you've relaxed all day, Karen. You're okay. Push yourself a little bit. Get moving. You know, you have work you have to do. And I changed into my exercise clothes and decided that I was going to exercise when my doorbell rang. And I thought, well, that must be UPS. But my dogs didn't bark, which was so unusual. They always barked when it was a UPS because they thought it was for them. I opened the door, and I saw two men in military uniforms. I saw a little tiny gold cross on the lapel of the older man, and I knew why they were there. And I said, Wes is dead. And, you know, you say those words, but you really want to be wrong.
Right.
And the one officer nodded his head, and he began speaking the secretary of the Department of the Army, the script, and it was immediate shock. I didn't hear the rest of what he said. I was frozen in the doorway, and I just felt like I couldn't move. Finally, they just very gently said, you know, can we come in? And we sat down in the family room, and they said, is there someone that we can call to be with you?
Mm-hmm.
And then they helped me contact my other son, who was in Germany. So, you know, the first question that comes out of a mom is, you know, I started thinking was, how did Wes die? And the casualty notification officer said, Wes died by a gunshot wound to the head. And he didn't have any other details. So
was he deployed at the time? Were he and his wife and child living on one of those bases you mentioned at the time?
No, he was in Iraq.
Okay.
He was in Iraq.
So all the notification officer knew was that he had been killed by a gunshot wound to the head. You did not yet know who held that gun.
No, I did not know what had happened. And that night I couldn't sleep. I didn't want to sleep. There were just so many thoughts going through my mind. And I knew the next morning that there was going to be a casualty assistance officer that was going to be there at 8 o'clock. So I got up and showered, and he came. One of the most wonderful people that I have met during this difficult
time.
Terrible,
awful time. Yeah.
It was a tough journey because there was a lot of delays. There was an investigation. His body came to Dover, but it wouldn't be released for several weeks. They were looking into things, and there was all kinds of other things. And my CAO walked that journey with me. It took about 3 months until they made the determination that my son had died by suicide.
Wait a second. That 3 months before they knew that it was a self-inflicted gunshot wound, or 3 months before they told you, or I've never heard
three
of
months.
Something taking it, so long.
Well, it did because of the circumstances of what was going on. Wes had been in finance. And there was a situation. I don't like to go into negatives because of what happened, but someone preceding Wes had signed that there was money there that wasn't there. And
oh, wow.
Wes was going to be asked to sign for that money next. And my son said, I won't do that. And he was getting pressure from the officer over him. Well, just go ahead. It won't matter. Sign for it.
So they were trying to get him to basically dishonestly or fraudulently sign paperwork about the money.
Exactly.
And he refused.
My son was, they used to tell me that he was a mini me, which he hated to hear. But we both are by the rules kind of people.
Yeah, by the book.
By the book. So he reached out to different people. He went every avenue that he could think of. And, you know, he got people just said, oh, no, that can't happen, or this, you know, don't worry about it, or, you know, you're making, you know, too much out of it.
Yeah.
He wasn't getting the answers that fit the values that he had been trained through his entire life and his military career.
And his military training, right.
Right. So Wes documented everything, and he told the officer over him, I need to go back to my my room, or container, I guess they called it. It was just like a small trailer that he had.
Where he lived, yeah.
Yeah, and he went there, and he took his own life.
Oh, my goodness.
But before he took his life, he sent all of the investigative stuff to the commanding general over
group,
the inspector general.
So it was all submitted.
He submitted all of it. And as a matter of fact, as soon as they received that information, he had highlighted that it was his suicide note. And
oh, my goodness. At what point were you given this information? Is this the information you didn't get until the 3 months out? Did you and your daughter-in-law just so many questions?
Well, she had more things than I did because he had directly communicated some things to her.
Okay.
But she did not share any of his communications, and I can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
She had said something that, you know, things weren't right, but she didn't want to talk about it.
She didn't give the details. Sure.
Yes, yes. So, no, it actually was a 2-year period till all the information came to me because I wasn't primary
domestic.
But
I want to address that because I'm sitting here listening to the story, and I didn't actually want to interject this because the story itself is what's important. But for those of us who are civilians who don't really understand this process, I didn't know that the military extended past the very next of kin. So, for instance, like Brent was married
to
you.
Mother. And, yeah.
Yeah. So did Brent's parents also get a visit at the door?
A married soldier will have the primary next of kin would legally be the spouse.
Mm-hmm.
The secondary next of kin would be the parents. Brent's parents did have a casualty notification officer who knocked on their door. They also had the casualty assistance officer that walked with them through the funeral and things. There tends to be more work to be done and therefore a longer amount of time with the spouse or the mm-hmm. primary next of kin in terms of benefits and paperwork. But yes, Karen would have had hers the same as my in-laws had theirs. They would go to the parents and the spouse.
Yeah, so I didn't understand this at all.
Yeah.
So I'm listening to the story and I'm like, well, why are they notifying her if he's married? And then, but then I heard her say.
But they would not notify Karen until the wife was notified.
Okay.
Under no
exactly.
circumstances. They would wait until they got word from her notification team and the information would be given primarily to the spouse.
Okay.
And that's probably where Karen ended up not knowing everything because it was legally the spouse's information.
Right. Because my CAO had to do the Freedom of Information Act for me to get the information.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
So
very complicated and a lot of layers.
Yeah.
Like it's so, I mean, we appreciate our men and women in service, but we don't really think about what happens when somebody loses their life. And we've heard your story a bit, but like we haven't heard the story from Brent's side or family. No. And so that's really
a completely their own story.
Right. So Karen, when your person wasn't in communication with her person that's notifying, those people are separate.
They're separate because I was here in Pennsylvania and she was in Georgia at that time.
And do they communicate together at all or no? It's just a notification.
They do.
So there is communication.
Because you have to coordinate funeral and things like that.
So, a lot of it would be the primary next of kin would be able to a certain degree control. That sounds like the wrong word, but it's the appropriate word.
They have the primary responsibility.
They have the primary responsibility and the primary access. So if there were something I didn't want my in-laws to have known or didn't want, I would have the, well, and Karen, you know this, it gets into the technicalities of who's the primary next of kin legally, who might be the beneficiary on the life insurance, who's what's called the PAD, person authorized to dispose, remind me the second D, Karen. Person authorized for the disposal of the remains, except it's not an R. Think of another. Anyway, that the person
deceased.
Who basically has the deceased. The person who has the say over the ultimate, where will burial be? Will there be burial or cremation? And Karen, this is an interesting dynamic, you and me on the phone here, because you are the mother of the deceased, who now has the daughter-in-law as the widow. I am the widow, and I have in-laws who are the parents of the deceased. And sometimes it can be ugly. All the time, it's complicated. I remember my own journey. There were difficult things where I needed to make a decision, and I knew I needed to make the decision. The military's telling me that I had to make a decision, and you're concerned what other people's opinions are. But at the end of the day, somebody has to make the decision, and you're never going to be able to get everyone what they want or their way.
Right.
And we have a great relationship with my in-laws, but there were even some, initially, it's hard. Loss is a spider web, and Karen, I don't know. I can't imagine from your vantage point living out of state and so many complicated layers with your son's passing to not be the primary next of kin. I can't imagine learning the details of because you'd put in a grandma request for the Freedom of Information Act. I mean, that blows my mind. I had no idea.
Yeah, that's what, well, actually my CAO did all of that paperwork for me.
Bless his heart.
And you know what he did, too, is he actually read everything so he could sit down with me and over it and explain it to me.
How long of a process was he with you? You said it was a couple of years before these questions. You had an assigned casualty assistance officer for 2 years.
Yes, he was not with me every day.
Sure.
After the initial. But,
Just for other people listening to know, I mean, usually you're assigned the casualty assistance officer through the death, the funeral planning, the memorial services, maybe the first few months while you figure out paperwork and benefits. But ours was assigned to us for about 9 months. And I felt like that was a very long time, longer than I think he anticipated being assigned to us. But again, your extenuating circumstances are just unheard of. At least, I mean, I haven't yet heard of this. So it's very complicated.
Well, and I think a lot of what I went through has changed since then, because we're talking 2011, that's 12 years ago. And 12 years makes a lot.
And 2009 different. Was kind of the height of the war in terms of the casualty. That's when the Army in particular and the Department of Defense in general made a lot of changes in policy and procedure, because I think they realized, hey, this war is not just over. And there were a lot of losses. And now, like you said, many years later, there have been some great changes made, and you've been part of making those changes.
We are so happy to have Minky Couture as the sponsor of Relentlessly Resilient.
We both have several of these blankets in our homes for us and our families to get through those cold winter nights.
Oh, Minky makes the softest, most indulgent blankets.
And you know I feel they make the best gifts.
Any time of year, doesn't matter. Everybody loves a Minky.
Visit Minky in store or online at minkycouture.com. Treat yourself or a loved one to the gift of comfort today.
Thank you.
Okay, Karen, I wish we had hours for this conversation. There's so many layers, so much complexity. Can you walk us through your journey of resilience? Maybe tell us, what does resilience mean to you, and what has it come to mean to you in the past more than a decade now, 12 years since you lost your son?
Well, it's let's start with, what does resilience mean to me? And I have to defer to psychologist Adam Grant.
I love him.
Psychologist Adam Grant wrote a wonderful few lines on social media that captured the essence of resilience, and it really speaks my journey. He wrote, "Resilience isn't about forgetting the tragedies of the past. It's about honoring the memories of the past with gratitude for the present and purpose for the future. Helping others brings meaning to our lives. Helping where we were hurt brings meaning to our suffering."
I love that.
That is beautiful. Helping where we are hurt brings meaning to our suffering. That's a powerful definition, Karen. Tell us, what does that look like for you for the last decade or so?
Well, it's interesting, because when my son died, I had gone back to school. He had always told me, "Mom, you need to go back to school." And I took a few weeks off school because I just couldn't focus after he died.
But then I went back
and graduated, highest honors, and even got some special awards. And it's all because I wanted to do it for Wes. I wanted to do it for him. When I found out he died by suicide, I needed to understand suicide. And I was fortunate in that I had some great people. My SOS coordinator, he would have me talk to other family members who lost a son. Within the military,
yes.
He actually got me enrolled in the ASSIST program, which is basically suicide first aid. It's you know, just like we get taught how to do CPR if someone has a heart attack or drowns or something like that. This is, how do you deal with someone who's in a place where things aren't looking good? And this is a good spot, again, to say, if anybody listening is having any thoughts of taking their own life, or they know someone who is in a crisis, please dial 988, then press 1 if you're a veteran. If you're not a veteran, 988 will get you to someone who can help you. You can also chat online at 988lifeline.org. It's important that we are there for each other. My son had felt isolated where he was, and I think if he would have had someone that reached out to him, it could have made a difference for him. I know I've heard stories of other people who were struggling, and someone reaching out made a difference. After my suicide first aid that I took, the ASSIST program, I heard a story of a young man who was struggling, and he went out in the woods. You know, he had made plans how he was going to end his life, but he decided he forgot to leave a note. So he's trying to text a note, and he's sitting there trying to text his note, and all of a sudden all these messages and texts kept popping up from friends. "Hey, are you okay? Are you all right? What's going on? You're not yourself. What can we do? Okay, hey, can I come over?" And he got so frustrated, because here he is, he's trying to end his life, and all these people are reaching out with hope. And he thought about it, and he said, "You know, this many people loves me. I'm not going to do this." And he made a decision to respond to one of his friends. Mm-hmm. And they talked with him, and they met him, and he's here today.
Wow.
So sometimes just somebody reaching out by a text.
Yeah, you know, there's a big myth about suicide that if we talk about it, or that if we bring it up, that it's going to like plant the seed and somehow create the suicide.
And cause it, right.
And that's actually
That's suicide copycat or contagion.
Right.
Yes.
But it's actually untrue. It's a myth.
It's very untrue.
And
it's
it's
one of the common myths.
Yeah. And so one of the first things that any place, I've had people in my life that have dealt with this. I've done a lot of research looking at ways to help people with that you think may be suicidal. And the first thing you need to do is actually ask them about them.
Just directly.
Are you feeling blue?
Are you
sad? And are you feeling suicidal?
Safety first.
Yeah.
It's safety first.
Yeah.
And you have to be willing to extend yourself. You know, it's interesting. After my son died, I got 4 stars that I hung on red, white, and blue ribbons. And they were love, faith, hope, and then the last one, peace.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes love, faith, and hope to bring peace. And that's pretty much my journey. And the interesting thing about love, and this is another quote, for me, I like the definition. I think it was M. Scott Peck. Well, I know it is M. Scott Peck. He wrote an old book called The Road Less Traveled. He said, love is the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes love to start. And then that grows into the faith. And when you have faith, then you have hope. And sometimes we need someone else to carry faith for us because we just don't have the ability to carry it ourselves.
Yeah.
That's where you're there for the other person. You pray for the other person. You just wrap your arms around the other person.
And it's really important. I mean, we all want to be seen and heard. All of us, we have a need for connection, and that connection means being seen and heard. And so it's important for us, especially in this day and age where we have social media and technology and people feel like other people are, maybe their lives are going so well, or they don't need to actually check in with them with a phone call. But as connected as we are, it's very disconnecting because we're not actually spending time face to face, being present with one another and actually spending time seeing our friends or hearing from our friends and family members.
And
I want to mention
beyond social media.
I want to add before we wrap this up, if you Google how to help with someone with suicide, or even if you just Google suicide helpline, the helpline will come up, 988, but underneath it, and I've noticed this no matter how many different ways I've put it in Google, underneath that box will be a connect with people you trust. And it's from the International Association for Suicide Prevention, and it has starting text messages, and you don't even have to type them out. You can just select the one you want. You can click on it, and you can send it to a trusted contact in your phone. And so they have a reach out when you get a chance. Can you contact me? I feel really alone and suicidal and could use support. You can contact a loved one. I don't want to die, but I don't know how to live. Talking with you may help me feel safe. Are you free to talk? Expressing your feelings. This is really hard for me to say, but I'm having painful thoughts and I think it might help to talk. Are you free?
And you don't even have to type that. Those are options. You just touch the one
those
that feels.
Yep, yeah, those are prompts. Yeah.
And so you it's can taking just, that step away, that barrier.
And then there's a check-in. I'm struggling right now and I just need to talk to someone. Can we chat? You know, these are really important. And if you feel lost right now and you feel like you need to talk to somebody, start looking. We have done shows in the past with a great lady. Her name's
Ganelin Condi.
I can never say Ganelin. Ganelin. And she lost her sister to suicide. And she had a tip for us. We had her on a couple years ago. Get 3 to 5 friends on your contact list that you feel comfortable with, that in a situation you would be able to have that conversation. And you should do it now. It's part of building resiliency in our own lives because we never know when life just may hit us so hard and repeatedly that it may be too much for
us. It's hard to identify those people in the crisis moment.
Right.
You've got to have them
That's
kind of
right.
ahead.
Right. So
That's
it's
right.
So as we talk about resiliency here on the show, I just want to encourage people right now, think of at least three people, but if you can, five, and have the conversation with them in advance. Look, I'm not feeling bad today, but I want you to know that if you ever felt bad, I would want you to reach out to me. I want to be able to reach out to you. And this is what, you know, if I reach out to you for help, this is the kind of help I want. And you make those plans today.
That safe space between each
right.
other. Karen,
absolutely.
I am so grateful. I wish we had more time. There's so much to this story. You have so much to teach us. I love that quote back to Adam Grant that helping others brings meaning to our lives, but helping others where we've been hurt or where we've experienced loss or tragedy or trauma, fill in the blank word, that can help bring meaning to the pain and the loss. And you, my friend, have been a beautiful example of that. We didn't have time to talk much about the work the SOG has done, but for those who are listening, we've mentioned it with a couple of our guests before. It's a Survivor Advisory Working Group, SAWG, and it's a group of survivors like Karen who've lost someone within the military, particularly the Army in this case, who come together and share their experiences, their vulnerabilities, lessons learned, to try to help smooth out the process for those who will be next. We all wish there would never be another military death, but suicide or enemy hand or car accident or cancer or anything. But we just know it's going to happen. There will be more. And Karen's been able to give a great voice to some of these things. Like she said, there have been some improvements made from 2011 to 2023, and there's still work to be done. And she's working tirelessly and fiercely as an advocate to do that. So thank you, Karen, on behalf of all Army families for the work you're doing to help prevent the loss and to help nurture and care for those who experience loss.
There's one last thing I'd like to end on that really means a lot to me, and it's reflected in what Adam Grant wrote. I was asked to speak at a pre-deployment briefing because they had some individuals in their group who had anonymously said that they were thinking about taking their lives. And the training officer knew me from the assist training and asked me to come and talk to them. And he wrote me after I spoke. I just shared my heart with them. And he said, if you ever wonder if what you're doing is making a difference, I can tell you with 100% certainty you are making a difference. You connected so much with one of the soldiers that he broke down and asked for help. And 3 days later, I heard the second one came forward and asked for help too.
Mm, beautiful.
So being able to take my son's story and show the after effects with the family related to those two young men, and they came forward for help. So there's two moms that didn't have to get that knock on the door that I had. And that brings promise for the pain that I've been through. And that's part of resilience, weaving that grief into my life and seeing the tapestry that'll end up.
Yeah,
such
absolutely.
Beautiful insight. Thank you, Karen, for joining us. Thank you for sharing that story with us. We know there will be listeners who hear this story and are able to identify and learn and hopefully find that hope. I love that it's all hope-based. I think you started by saying you're a champion of hope or however you worded it. And thank you for sharing that hope. To our listeners, thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us again, particularly on these difficult subjects that are so hard and so personal and so can be traumatizing. And yet the beauty of the human spirit that can rise above, that's exactly what resilience is, turning your pain into service and help to someone else. So for those of you listening, thank you. We hope you'll find us on your favorite podcast platform and give us a like and a rating and a review. That helps us get the word out there and help connect with more people on the listening side and on the sharing side. As
Absolutely.
Always, if you're listening and you have a story of resilience through your own experience that you're willing to share, we would love to connect with you. You can find us on social media. Facebook, it's Relentlessly Resilient. Instagram, Relentlessly Resilient Podcast. Go find and like our page. There's a little button where you can schedule a quick interview phone call to talk about opportunity to share your story on the show. We'd love to get you on the calendar, and we'd love to make that connection and help each other as we all strive to develop those tools of resilience that we need.
And whatever you do, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their lives. Have a great day.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.